watch Survivor, and when the show ends, you really wanna talk about it with like-minded friends. It might be hard to find some, but don't you shed a tear. Check out the Purple Rock Podcast, and this is what you'll hear. John will make some dumb jokes, and he likes to yell and curse, and if they're not available, the backup hosts are so much worse. Spend the whole time being jerks, telling you you're wrong, and so we got this other jerk to sing you our theme song. It's the Purple Rock Survivor Podcast.
Welcome to the Purple Rock Survivor Podcast. I am John, my co-host is Andy, and this week we are talking Survivor 46, episode 12, where we're right back to canceling Christmas, except for your Christmas, Andy, because how about them real idols, though?
Amazing. I didn't get to see it until like midnight my time, so you were probably well asleep, you know, visions of unplayed idols dancing in your head. But the instant it happens, it's like, wait, I think we were supposed to flash record this if it were to happen this week. I think that was the promise made.
You know, you really wouldn't think that you'd even need to block that time on your calendar because the odds were just so stacked against it.
And yet,
I mean, the thing is, I would have never put the odds at zero.
No, definitely not. I mean, we brought it up because it was a legitimate possibility.
Right.
But dare we hope. Oh, we dare.
I was showing the episode to my kids and I was like, more like hidden liability idol, am I right? And they just, it didn't land. I was like, come on. That was good.
Working with gold here.
That's a solid dad joke.
Did you explain the differences between liabilities and assets and all that? No, I'm sure you did that in the womb.
Exactly. I mean, what do you think dinner conversation is every night? So, hey, first of all, this feels almost unnecessary, but did you enjoy this episode?
We are so blessed. What did we do? I think podcast about this show for 10 years is what we did to earn this. Just amazing stuff, you know, and obviously, you know, the ending is the highlight, but no, man, this is good stuff. Good stuff all the way through. We're blessed.
It was so well done. I mean, I loved that we saw all the votes and like they just left Q playing the idol or not as the suspense, right? It's not you're in suspense as to who the votes are going to be for. Like it was just, all right, we're going to lay it out for you. The only thing you have to be aware of is whether or not Q is going to play this idol.
And like, either way would have entertainment value.
Exactly. At that point, you can't lose, right? The episode's still going to be good regardless. And I mean, I like that, you know, 46 seasons in, they're doing still fun stuff with the edits. And like, the story was well told, you know, like you're subverting my expectation of like, oh, we're going to get the votes being read and will the idol be played? No. You're just like, hey, fuck it. The vote is for Q. Let's see if he saves himself. Like, yes, great. I also loved the juxtaposed, like, should I target my number ones? Like, with the, like, simultaneous, like, we're putting Charlie up and then Maria up and they're both talking about it. Like, again, just the show does so well. I cannot believe it doesn't win all the, like, Emmys for reality competition. Like, what show is edited better than this and produced better than this?
I mean, truthfully, we don't know. We don't really watch them, I'm sure, is the answer. That's fair. But I also
I watched
think,
Eurovision. I don't know if that's the same, though.
Who knows? Although I also know almost certainly the truth is that industry types got bored of watching or voting for this show.
That's fair.
That's fine. Yeah, we'll get to all of that. But no, like, it's another great episode. Most of them have been since, you know, we got rid of the emotional vampire of the season. And really now, and we'll see how it plays out. We have one left. I'm very excited. I'm now sitting here thinking, how highly can I rank a season with potentially no good gameplay? You know,
I
think there will be, again, we'll have to see, you know, I think we'll probably have a good winner. So that'll help, but it's like at this point right now, it's like maybe it doesn't matter, you know? Maybe it doesn't matter because my God, four in a row, four in a row.
You know what I was thinking as it happened? I was flashing back, which was obviously a fond memory for me. And it's a joke for others, but like the LeBron Heat intro, not one, not two, not three. Like,
I feel like that's more fun for us, John, because it was just two.
Yes, yes, I'm aware. Still a fond memory. I got to watch LeBron on my team in his prime and they won championships.
I mean, two is great. It's just, you know, that presentation, not one, not two, not three, not four.
Sure.
Anybody who was a hater of that moment, even in, you know, retrospect or just there. I was a bit of a sports hater for really basic reasons. The Heat forming did nothing to my like sensibilities or my sense of morality of how professional sports could be. It's like, oh, my team's not going to win anymore. That's where that came from. Just basic stuff.
Yes. Yeah, it was the absolute, like, I would completely understand being pissed if they joined up for, like, the Bulls. I'd have been like, ah, fuck those three. But it was my team, so it's like, ah, yeah, these guys are great.
But yeah, no, so, man, four in a row, five total, it needs to be added. Oh, my God. I mean, it can't happen five times in a row. It just can't, right? That,
you know?
I would die.
It is available to play until Final Five. Like, we got confirmation from Q in this episode.
Look, I'm not saying that it won't be rehidden. I'm not saying that it wouldn't be found. But you would think. You would think.
Just the absolute audacity to go into that final tribal and being like, well, I can only play this until now, but I'm going to let it ride. I'm feeling good.
I would die.
I don't know that it could get funnier than that. No. Like, it truly.
I'm laughing already at the thing that's not going to happen.
But again, you want
to
say.
I don't think I need to play it, but of course, this is the last time I need to play it. But what if I was able to show the final jury that I never had to play an idol?
Yeah, I had the idol. I didn't even need to use it. I was so confident in my game. Just imagine. Again, the odds, nearly infinitesimal
but
small.
But not zero.
But not zero.
Because we just got four.
As the math nerds would say, it's approaching zero. But it is not zero. So, yeah.
Oh my God, it's so beautiful. It's just... God bless.
You know, was there any point during that episode where you're like, nah, it's not going to go that way? Like, or were you fairly confident that, like, Q was the type? He could just hold
it. So when he found it, I'm like, all right, we're cooking here, folks. You know, because, like, the first step is somebody has to have it, right?
Yes.
Then Maria wins immunity, and I'm like, oh, this is feeling good, I think. And what's great is my oldest son was in the room, like kind of pissing around in like a fake Pokemon game on the computer. And he was kind of semi-watching. And he had semi-watched an earlier episode where Q was doing lots of Q things. I think he like won a challenge when people... The reward challenge that he won.
Oh, yes.
I believe I remember him making some kind of decision as a result. so he's like, this guy's great. And I'm like, oh... He's like, they can't vote him out. He has an idol. It's like, oh, son, let me tell you something.
They can't vote him out if he plays the idol.
Like, and then he's like, well, he would not play it. It's like, well, let me tell you something, son. So
I know you're not an experienced survivor here.
Like,
but...
I only watched a few seasons. Was like, what the? So the challenge beast of the season. He's finally available to be voted. He knows he has votes coming towards him. Did not play that idol. A woman who kept talking, I should just waste this thing because I know it puts a target on my... Did not play that idol.
No.
A woman who was left out of every vote, or at least the previous vote, not every vote, that had no solid allies, who had just seen two people go home with idols. Did not play that idol. So, yeah, no, man, I really thought we were getting there. You know, it's like my only doubt was, could I really be that lucky? and me specifically, it's about me. But yeah, I mean, when Charlie, I know, like, I got nervous when Charlie's like, I need to tell Maria. It's like, no, you don't. You really don't. Charlie, don't right. do this to me.
Yep.
But
it's just, you know, I have to admit that I had my doubts with you because I could see a world in which somehow in this season, it would be so fitting that all these other people didn't play it. And then fucking Q would be the only person to play an idol this season, have it actually save him. Like, I could see that as a legitimate possibility for how this season went.
Did that up as a possibility in the podcast last week? Or did I just think it or somewhere else? I can't even remember. But I agreed.
I don't know.
Either would be hilarious. Four in a row.
Right.
But the funniest. But that Q, yes, of all people is the one to be like, no, this is how it's done, folks. Also hilarious.
Watch me. Yes, exactly. That's the thing. It's like, I was like a little nervous that he might play. But at the same time, I was like, you know what, though? I'm going to laugh either way at the end of this episode. Like, both of these outcomes, very funny TV.
A true win-win so, situation.
Really was.
But I did feel like as it was happening in Tribal Council, it's like he's not playing that idol. And part because it just didn't feel like the season was building towards Charlie going home like this. I think the episode did a good enough job convincing us that it could be Charlie. But it's just like I don't feel like that's where this is going. And then when they showed all the votes, I'm like, I think I know what's happening here. But I was still on pins and needles when, you know, Jeff asked the question. Dun, dun, is he going to pull it? Is he gonna, I'm so excited. It was.
Yes. I think it also, like, this was very gratifying because now you've set up an amazing arc to go into the finale with, right? Like, the whole Charlie versus Maria coming to a head, like, now you get that for the finale, right? Like, if Charlie had gone here, like, that would have been amazing, like, great TV. But then you'd go into the finale, like, all right, well, now it's Maria versus the world, basically.
Yeah.
And now you still get the Charlie and Maria clash that we were promised, with Charlie knowing that Maria is ready to have taken the shot at him, was like, took the shot, came at the king and missed.
Yeah. And so, Maria knowing that she actually doesn't have the weapons to do it with. Yeah, no, I'm really excited. And this leads to, like, yeah, the highlight of the episode was the fourth time in a row, fifth overall, of somebody going home with an idol in their pocket. But the best scene in the episode, and frankly, one of the best scenes ever in Survivor, was the dueling confessionals of Maria and Charlie, both realizing they had to turn on one another, but struggling with the implications of it. And, like, just in that really showed us some, like, true survivor essence in a way that I don't think they ever have before.
Right. I think you got the sense that they both recognize that this is a game and that they realized, game-wise, it does make sense for me to do this. But there is this, like, level of, you know, did we form a legit friendship/relationship and will this harm it? And so you could see both of their perspectives on that. And they both kind of waffle on it where they're like, yeah, you know, I think I need to do this. And then they're also like, ah, I don't know, man, I would feel bad because that's Charlie or that's Maria. Like, it was great storytelling. And it also set
and then
up an
in
awesome
both of them
narrative arc.
Yeah, and for both of them, neither seems at all to consider that the other one is considering this. So it's all just an internal struggle for them whether they should do this, but not really much of a can it be done? Neither of them seem to be worried whether the other votes that are necessary for this to happen will materialize. And neither of them really considers that the other person might be doing this to them. You know, that's really, that was fascinating and really interesting that, you know, oh, will they forgive me and all that. Meanwhile, like, the other person is doing the exact same thing. I'm very interested and excited to see what happens when they go back. I'm hoping Charlie doesn't have a lot of hypocrisy about it.
Right, exactly.
You know, I think it'd be funny. She'd be like really feeling bad. It's like, If you weren't immune, I was going to vote you out.
Right. Like, I mean, I think it was also a solid contrast to what we saw earlier in the season with Kenzie saying basically that she and Tiffany had already talked and like they were cool with the fact that, you know, at some point maybe they got to come for each other. Like, it was clear Charlie and Maria had not had that discussion, right? Like, there was no emotional letting off the hook where like, hey, whatever happens, happens. That conversation had never taken place between them.
And what's also good is that, like, for neither of them, do you feel like this is a mistake?
And this, you know? Right, because this totally lines up with something that we've discussed, which is, like, you know, the idea of going after your number one, if you have, like, a backup plan in place, and clearly both of these two do, right? Like, this makes logical sense for both of them, unlike some other people in this season who have made this suggestion.
Yeah. I don't want the lesson to ever be from the ways we've criticized so many other players this season for looking to turn against their alliance that you should never do it. And like in the episode that like I wasn't here to podcast about, you and Mike talked about it a bit, and like it was sprung from Kenzie's statement that like it's a key part of winning or a key part of your resume, like classic Survivor. And yeah, you know, the approach you guys took, which I agree with, was since when, right? Like, I don't show me the wins, but I do feel like. And I think it's because you were keyed on her ridiculous statement that you guys went a little too far in suggesting like you don't have to, because you gave a bunch of, and again, I don't think that was really the point you meant to make, but you made a list of people who'd never turned on their alliance and won. But the thing is, in those lists are also a bunch of people that should have turned on their alliance and didn't and lost. Right,
exactly.
Right? Yes. So yes, you do have to do it. But our point has been throughout the season, like not now or not like this, you know. You got to wait for your moment. And obviously, it can't always be a perfect moment because of the various things. You know, there used to be in this game little items that you could, acquire that would make it difficult, if not impossible, for people to vote you out. You know, I suppose that's not a thing anymore, but like there could be issues, right? They have challenges, that sort of thing. So obviously, it can't always be the perfect moment. But it has to be the right moment. And part of that is like, okay, you've succeeded. What does success look like for you? And nobody else that we've seen seemed to consider that. But in these dueling confessionals, both of them are. And then it just kind of boils down to, well, which one of them is right?
Right. And I think both of them are clearly, or have clearly, thought about the after, right? They know, okay, I'm going to go after my number one. And here's what's going to take place after, you know, like I will then be aligned with Q in Maria's case, or like Charlie's like, I have been like, I have relationships with all these people. I've got lots of like irons in the fire where I feel like I can still move amongst these other people. Like, and you know, you and I, obviously both NBA fans, we make NBA references, have already done so in this podcast, but it's like, it reminds me of the highlights we were seeing this week with like Jokic just backing down the defensive player of the year and then just shooting these crazy fadeaways over him. Like, you know what? You played that about as well as you could. Both of you did very well, but only one of you can be successful. And that's like exactly what happened here.
Yeah. And like, so Maria ends up looking worse for it because she was incorrect in her assessments of all the players involved. But, you know, she does have a backup plan in Q. Now, I will say, I like Charlie's backup plan in Ben more than I like Maria's in Q. But, you know, you work with what you got. I think, you know, her forming an alliance with Q served her well for a couple of votes, at least. So, yeah, no, it was just a really well done sequence. Showing, you know, I think the two top players of this season. But I do think it's very clearly who's one and who's two. And that brings me to a piece of fan mail we got this week.
Oh, this is what we should set this up.
Yes.
Like, because I did mention on the podcast last week that there's a new feature, which I found mind-boggling. I don't know why this exists, but I was like, fuck it, this could be fun. Let's turn this on. So it's a fan mail feature wherein you can click a little button on the podcast description or on the website. And it'll just, assuming you're on your phone, you can just send a text. It, apparently, we now know a little bit more about it. It's just going to send a little text that we can read. We can't respond to you until this, you know, next week's podcast, which we're doing right now. But we got way more than I was expecting. And it, like, it reminds me that, you know, I'm so used to being on our website, wherein we have a very wonderful community of, like, consistently, let's say it's around 100 commenters, like, you know, from week to week around that. And I'm like, oh, that's our audience. No, that's like a portion of our audience.
Yeah.
There's like
a,
all
a
these
small
other
portion based
that we
on
don't
our
interact
numbers.
With. Right. And it's just like, oh shit, that's right. The rest of you are out there. You just don't talk to us.
Yeah, so we got a few. We'll mention them throughout. We're not necessarily always going to turn the podcast over to the messages you sent us, simply because, you know, we're not a jukebox. You know, we'll talk about what we want to talk about. But this one. And look, first off, this was sent in on Sunday, like Mother's Day. So way before this episode. So keep that in mind. But it's like, I have never messaged you guys before, but hot take. You guys are dead wrong to think Charlie is playing better than Maria simply because she's a woman who's strong enough to take credit for a move, which I don't know there's a point we ever made, but we'll continue. A woman affirmatively taking credit to stand out and being criticized, while a guy is liked for just rolling along as his tail as old as time. She set herself up to beat Charlie if they make the final three, and he can't say the same. This is one of those where it's like, this did not age well.
It's an interesting take, especially knowing what we know now.
Yes.
you know, at this game, this season, this jury now has all been about resumes, right? At least judging by how they played and their confessionals and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, Maria taking credit for the move is exactly why they're all now down to take her out, right?
Yeah.
Like, if she hadn't done that, like, Charlie didn't do that. They consider this Maria's move, and now Maria is a threat. You know, so she did indeed set herself up to beat Charlie if he makes the final three, which is why Charlie is now coming for her, right? Like, it was a good thing to take credit for it. However, it comes with risk, and now she's realizing the other side of that.
Yeah, and not just Charlie, three other people. And that's kind of what exactly we were getting at. And obviously, when this comment was sent, and obviously whatever they're responding to, I'm guessing our discussion last week about the two players, we don't know that she'd lose her backup number one. We don't know that people were ready to move on her, but actually we did, is the thing. This is the second week in a row that people were talking about let's vote out Maria, and obviously both times she won immunity, which could still happen again, by the way.
Yep.
So I'm not ruling her out as a winner, but that's what we were responding to, that like enough things were pointing that like Maria has put herself in the hot seat here, and we did not feel like it was going to go well, whereas Charlie clearly had optionality and room to move. Maria didn't.
But I think we,
you know,
I think we also probably did mention that we would prefer in these cases that you actually do something, right? That you assume some level of risk. And like, whether that was too much risk or not, we'll find out. I mean, as you said, Maria's won two straight immunities. She could theoretically win a third. And, you know, this could come back and be like, wow, Maria just killed it. Like, what a march to the
finish. If she marches to the finish while staving off elimination, I think she'll be in very good condition, especially because I don't believe that Charlie would be sitting next to her.
Agreed. I think it's going to be very clear that she would need to get rid of Charlie. And I think that's not going to be put off. That's not being saved until Final Four, unless there's not a possibility to get rid of Charlie at Final Four.
Yeah, like, I think the only way they both make Final Four is if that idol is found and actually played, and then the other one of them has immunity. But like, one of them is going at Final Five, barring that scenario. So in that respect, yeah, no, like, she's done a good job. But like, to say that she did better than Charlie, I mean, you're of course welcome to your opinion. I can see it. Like, yeah, it depends on what you value. But what we were responding to is what the episode was telling us, that she has heat now and people want to make a move on her. We were also responding to the fact that she took 10 minutes to choose who to bring to another. And that was in text. That's come in post-game interviews. So that's fine if we ignore the 10-minute part of it. But we know that the people were not happy with the way she managed the reward last week. People that who in turn did not vote with her this week. It must be noted that she clearly needed to vote with her in order to make the move against Charlie that she feels necessary for her own victory. Whereas the move that Charlie wanted to make, clearly he had people on board with it because they were even willing to go on the lesser version of it to vote out Q. So this week we get more evidence and we see Charlie making the same choice. So how do you think he handled that compared to how she did?
I mean, obviously better, but
we should note,
you know, he did have the advantage of seeing and hearing the reactions to what Maria did, right?
Like, you know? His is a response to that, absolutely.
Yes. You know, does he maybe come off looking better because of that? Absolutely. I think, was this something that he necessarily would have done all along? Sure, maybe. But I think having seen those reactions to how Maria handled it, like, he then immediately is like, okay, it's you and it's you and I'm sorry. Like, it's not agonizing and hand wringing and all this shit. It's just like, okay, you, we're done. Sorry.
Yeah. No, you're right in that we don't know that he would handle this easily because it was informed by it. It was like, hey, before we even got here, I knew I would just choose the people that didn't eat pizza last week. Yep. Right. I also don't think he would have handled it as bad as she did, because I don't know if anybody in the history of Survivor has handled that choice worse than the way that Maria did. And I think the comparison speaks volumes to their games. I think Maria has been a good strategic player. I think she made a key alliance with Charlie. I think she made a shrewd alliance with Q when everybody else was just trying to ostracize the guy. But I don't know that she's actually made a lot of strong, warm connections with everybody else there. I think she's assumed that she has. And you saw that in the way that she dealt with, you know, Kenzie and Liz, and we'll get into that in a second. But whereas Charlie, and again, it's edit-based, but so was our opinion on why we think Charlie's playing better than Maria is based on the edit. But we've seen Charlie, you know, really integrate himself with so many different people. And honestly, you can even bring this back to the pre-merge. So the one vote they had to go to, they voted out Jem, who, reminder, was holding an idol at the time. Was Jem more closely aligned with Charlie, or was Jem more closely aligned with Maria?
You can't expect me to remember that.
I'll give you a hint. Jem and Mariah thought they were in a women's alliance, okay? So there's that. So it was Maria, and also the other option was Ben, okay?
Right.
Charlie got his way on that. And I kind of feel like that's instructive of how it's been going since then. That, like, Charlie's been getting his way. He just has been really smart in not letting everybody know it. That's the thing. I applaud Maria for taking charge and getting rid of Tiffany when she did. The mistake was then really wanting the credit for it after it happened, especially following several other votes where we saw people want to take credit for it and then get penalized for that desire. So that's all the reason why that I'm very confident, in fact, in saying that Charlie's playing better than her. Does it? Yeah. The winner will be probably decided at Final Five.
And, you know, they both, as you mentioned, seem to think, yeah, like, Kenzie and Liz are with me. Why do you think they're both so confident in that? Is it just like, oh, I'm analyzing what is in their best interest, and I think that they're going to vote in their best interest?
No. So Charlie's easy, because Kenzie and Liz approach him as though it is their idea.
There you go.
Boom. Maria and Q? I have no idea why they were... Actually, I do have an idea. Overconfidence and underestimating them. That's what it was.
Yes. I mean, Maria especially seemed pretty confident about Liz, considering what just went down with that whole nightmare reward thing. Like,
how is that not singed into your brain and realizing how much damage control you have to make? I mean, she was in tears about it when we got back from Tribal Council because of the way Venus lit into her, which I had no problem with. Fine human moment. But then it's like, yeah, but Liz is on lock. What?
It's been a day. Like,
you think she poops and everything goes away?
Yeah, I mean, some things so do. Much better now. Water under the bridge, along with my poop. I think you touched on the right thing, which is that, like, Charlie doesn't come off as someone trying to lead the votes. And in this episode, he clearly had the idea to turn on Maria, right? Like, this was a thing that had been discussed. It got brought up last week. But he made it seem like he had to be sold on that move, which gives that, like, Liz and Kenzie the credit-seeking opportunity, right? Where credit seems super important to this group. They can feel like, oh, you know, I got Charlie to do this. Like, this was my move. Realistically, it's the end goal that Charlie wants too, but it doesn't make him a threat to them because it feels like they just got to do their move.
Yeah. Contrast with Maria basically just telling Liz and Kenzie, I mean, asking. I don't think it was just a flat out, this is what we're doing. It was like, how do you guys feel about voting
how
out Charlie?
Feel about Charlie?
Yeah.
Yep.
Both at the same time, not like kind of one on one, not really digging and kind of the way that we've seen Charlie operate with everyone this season. And they both just kind of really fairly passively lie about it. Like, yeah, okay. And again, edit wise, but that's all we have. Maria's like, boom, nailed it. At this point, now it's only about me and my own decision. Like, not really ever seeming to interrogate whether should I trust this? Should I do something about it? Is there something I could do about it? Yeah, actually, there ends up being something exactly you could do about it. You could tell your alliance partner to play the idol that he's informed you exists when that you are informed that at least one person is voting for her. But, you know, Maria receives that information and it's like, oh, my poor sweet Charlie, you just have no idea of what's going to happen to you. I hope we'll still be friends. I hope you'll still want to meet my kids. It's just overconfidence and underestimating the other people in the game. It happens all the time. It's a classic downfall of survivors. And I don't know. It's just so hard. And part of it is because, you know, they cast narcissists for the show. But just like to understand, like, everybody there, even the lowly person, even the person who you believe has no chance to win, which often you're probably correct. You know, in a post-Gabler world, I'd feel a little differently. But still, they have their own decision-making trees and you need to kind of figure out what those are. And we don't get a sense that there was like a long sell. And some of it I get, they gave her the answer she wanted. So why move, you know, sell past the close? But there didn't seem to be a lot of doubt that it wasn't even like the token that you'd throw in to, you know, throw us off the scent of the edit of like, well, if Kenzie and Lindsay are on our side, Liz. I don't think I'd write it on a parchment, so I probably would have gotten her right. Then everything should be good. Like, it was never like, oh, what happens if I try to turn on Charlie and it doesn't work? There doesn't seem to be, in the story that we've told, any form of doubt. And that just, again, goes back to why we kind of started to be less high on Maria, despite it seemed like she's doing the same stuff as Charlie, but maybe a little bit better, is that there seemed to just be a lot of ego involved in Maria's decision-making, all the way back to when she didn't want to vote out Tiffany because it was Kenzie's idea, even though voting out Tiffany is the thing she wanted to do most, right?
Right. I think there was also something to the fact that it's her pushing the idea, right? I can understand being more confident in their vote if you say to them, like, hey, who are you guys thinking? And they both had said Charlie.
Yeah.
Maybe you're like, perfect. Okay, well, that's a win. I'll walk away from this one, you know, wash my hands of this matter. It's all good. But, you know, you pushed an idea. They just said yes. It didn't seem like a substantive conversation from what we saw. I don't think I would be super confident. Although, again, she's probably feeling like she's riding high because she's got immunity.
Yeah.
Q's got an idol. Like, it's, you know, you can kind of understand it.
And I think the immunity, like, thing is a big part. Continue.
I think so, too. Like, you play with that, like, irrational confidence. Like, yeah, well, I know I'm safe. So you're just, like, playing with house money at that point. And I think it's, you know, she overplayed her hand, to continue with the gambling analogy.
Yeah. Here's another thing, though. If they had been like, oh, yeah, I think we should move on Charlie, maybe she wouldn't want to do it anymore because it's not her move.
Now it's their idea. Maybe that's why she didn't ask. Like, I had this.
I'd ask, but I'm genuinely not interested in what other people have to think.
Let's talk Ben for a second, because you briefly mentioned him. So that vote that went to Kenzie last week, I had thought in watching that episode, I assumed intentional vote split made sense as like a hedge You know, like low probability, but hey, why not hedge it just in case? But it wasn't that. Like he said it to us on screen in a confessional, like just us. If it had just been a conversation with him and Kenzie, I'd be like, wow, that's a terrible lie. But no. When it was just him talking to the producers and the camera, he was like, yeah, I wrote the wrong name.
I wasn't supposed to write that, and I just blanked.
Word!
Yeah, I buy it. Again, of course, for one, why say it to us? You ain't got to lie here.
Yes.
Right. But also, the season, man. This is a season where the impossible happens. And yeah, man, to the point where somebody forgot the way they were supposed to vote. Now, I suppose that's not the first time it's ever happened. I feel like people maybe have messed it up in like vote split scenarios. You know, obviously, Natalie lied about it, in San Juan del Sur, but I think it's actually probably happened. Man, he just completely blanked, and then that was a name he could remember. I'm not sure what was going. How do you get that blank and then just write Q, you know?
Right. I'm used to writing down Q's name. Maybe I'll just write that.
And I think, yeah, it's just like perfectly symbolic of the season in that there's just a stunning amount of idiocy and like weirdness going down, yet it's really entertaining. So,
well, and one possible reason for this is that, like, we see at the beginning of the episode, Ben is really fucking struggling. He's basically dying. Like, he's having a pretty significant breakdown. And, like, he's not well. To the point that, like, at the start of this episode, I was like, oh, are we getting an evac situation? Is that what's going to happen? And, yeah, so I don't think he was lying to us or to Kenzie. But also, wow, how did that happen?
Yeah. So, like I said, I think it's symbolic of this season because of just how wacky it was. But then I think it's also symbolic of the new era Survivor and the levels of deprivation they're dealing with, which I know old schoolers don't want to hear about it because they'd still have like 2 weeks left to play at this stage of the game. Man, like the body and mind do things to themselves when there's no calories or sleep being provided. And yeah, it's like, can we just feed these people a bit more? Now, I'm not like on the token of some people, I think yourself included, or it's like, I don't care about that. No, like deprivation is an essential ingredient to this show. Otherwise, it's Big Brother. It's like the traitors, you know, like seeing these people get worn down is part of what makes Survivor Survivor, but it's not the main thing. You know, I need some deprivation. You know, they need dirt. They need to be kind of hungry. They need to be desperate. They don't need to be like desiccated husks, and like Ben especially.
Right.
And look, man, some of this could be completely unrelated to the lack of food. I don't believe that, but it's possible because it is like these night terrors. But you know, I'm no like doctor, but I can assume that the two can be related a bit.
And then also just the general lack of sleep leading to like panic attacks and shit. Like, yeah, I can.
Right. Yeah. And I think like the general lack of sleep could be as a result of the, you know, the starvation and all that too. Right. But like you think of Ben, like in the first part of the season, he was like the guy bouncing everywhere. He was like there was a lot of life to him. Right.
Yes.
Because he was on a tribe that was winning enough rewards. And of course, also not enough time. He's the reason we do like, well, I guess he actually is not the reason. No, in some ways he's the reason we do like top three ones all the time because it was supposed to be a one-off thing. Right.
Right.
Like that was kind of his thing to the point where we're like, is he too much? And now like, look at the poor guy. He can't remember names.
It's sad. And that's the thing is I think I have said before, like, I'm not tuning in to watch these people starve, which is still true. I am with you in that, like, yeah, you can do some level of deprivation, but, like, give these people a small amount, like, a subsistence level of food, right? Like, it's fine for them to be a little hungry, to be roughing it. Like, you don't have to give them a full, like, three-course meal every day. But at the same time, you know, the Ben of 6-7 episodes ago versus the Ben of now is just very different. And I would prefer to see a livelier, more entertaining Ben.
Yeah, I mean, he's kind of become invisible, right? And I think it's just because, like, obviously some of it is plot driven, but I think a lot of it is the guy isn't giving anything because he has no energy.
Right.
It's like, isn't it more fun when they have energy? Some of the best moments this season is when, like, people are, like, finally got some food in themselves and all of a sudden, boom, oh, look at how hyper they are.
Right. They went and played fucking hide and seek.
Yeah. You know, now, I mean, in that moment where Ben blanks on a name, he had eaten a bunch of pizza, but I guess he was pizza drunk at that point.
What a phrase. Oh, and then Probst just like going at him like it's in like, what? So your claim is that you were pizza drunk, like he's fucking prosecutor, like cross-examining him, like, well, wait That's a right. minute.
In all the hours of interrogation videos I watch, like yeah. a fucking freak, I've never heard of this. Well, Probst, have you heard about starving out the suspect before you start grilling them? Because that's a thing. I mean, you know, they might not talk about that, the clips that you see, but...
You never know. He could be tuning into Guantanamo footage.
Oh, never know.
I don't think they put that online.
I mean, I think they absolutely put that online, but maybe not the places that, yeah.
Right, not intentionally.
The dark web.
Right. Hey, yes.
We skipped over this, but, you know, before we move on to the really non-survivor parts of this, Charlie's gotten pretty far. He's, you know, I think he's the best player of the season. I feel like you're in the same place.
Yeah.
But best players at this point in the season tend to get targeted, and I suppose in some ways he was. But not really. You know, obviously, you know, 4-2. What? Why? Why do you think that, like, the majority of people in this, and frankly, even the two that did, it took them this long for, like, nobody seems to be threatened by Charlie as much as they should be? Because it's like, to review, he's won immunity a couple of times, been a finalist in other things. So usually that's enough to be like, oh, that guy is a physical threat. You know, he gives off the nerd vibe. So usually that's like, oh, we got to watch out for that guy. He's really smart. You know, he's a challenge or, you know, strategic threat. We see him well socially integrated. That's usually enough to be like, oh, we got to watch out for Charlie. He's really well liked. But that doesn't really seem to be happening, except finally now with Q and Maria. And, you know, at this point, they're running out of options. Any thoughts why that is? Because I actually do have an actual theory of why this is.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's largely about the cast that he's playing with. Like, I don't think that this would be universally consistent across Survivor. But in a season where people care a whole lot about, like, your resume making you a threat and needing to get a big move onto your resume so that you can later become said threat, like, Charlie is wisely staying out of that and using it to his advantage to then let people step up and get chopped until the moment where he would then have to step up and there's no one left to chop. And I think that game works really well in this season. Would it work in other seasons? Not necessarily, because as you said, like, there are certain elements about him that would normally get you targeted, right? Like immunity wins and, you know, seeming very competent and having those social connections and working relationships and stuff like that. People would generally say, like, oh, man, I don't know if I want to sit next to this guy. But that just hasn't come up. And I think it's this focus from the rest of the cast on, like, I'm so laser focused on my own resume that I'm not seeing what Charlie is doing here.
Yeah, and I think the easy and probably correct answer is it's the hallmark and credit to Charlie's game. And then, as you say, also just the comparison to all the other games. You know, question has floated, and I think part of it is people are like, well, I feel like he's playing well, but is this a case where the jury doesn't feel the same way as has been in the past with, I don't know, like a Xander figure or something like that? I have an even more specialized theory, which could suggest that it's, you know, wacko, but I'm going for it. I think Charlie, being such an obvious Swiftie, is what's paying off for him in this regard.
because you think it makes him less threatening.
Yeah, I think. And he leads with that, you know, when he's first out there, when he's first meeting people. And it's obviously not just like his initial tribe with like the weird, you know, running off of song titles. You know, we saw post-merge that, like, you know, Venus, you know, gets a playful little dig at him in the challenge, you know, shake it off and stuff. So, like, it's a thing with everybody. In this episode, he's written, you know, 22 on his hands. You might not know this. That is the name of a Taylor Swift song.
Oh, I did not know this. No, you're right.
I think it was also might have been 22 days. So, you know, both. But he did it specifically, obviously. Like, I'm guessing he did it because it was 22 days. But, the, like, that number means something to him because of the Taylor Swift 22 song. I think it gave off to everybody such beta male vibes that they just instantly dismissed him as a threat. And he's been able to operate within there ever since. Like, I'm not even just joking around. This isn't me just trying to, I think it's a real thing. And, you know, it's so that now when everybody's target hunting and worrying, and it's like, yeah, but not Charlie. He's that goofy Swifty. He's the family dog of the group here, which is,
that was wild. What the family analogy, he ends up as the dog.
Like, I would have thought like the brother was easy, but right. You know, I guess maybe she already had that, but yeah man, I think it's a real thing. And I don't think it was intentional necessarily by Charlie, but I think everybody was like, oh well, this guy isn't a threat, even though like he profiled so easily as one for so many other seasons, right? But
I think probably also she didn't want to like label him the stepbrother just
because. Oh, no, you know, we don't now need to go there.
No further
questions, Your Honor. Yeah.
The people who know what I was getting at there.
And in many ways, in accomplishing that, whether it was subconscious or not, it's led to one of my favorite, like, managing your threat level games that we've seen in a while, because a lot of them just result in people kind of being shitty, you know, like just sucking at things, right? Like my least favorite winner of all time. I haven't really thought of the list, but it, like, right up there is Tommy from 39, because his admitted strategy, and you know what, I'll even believe it to some degree, it's a convenient way of saying it, but you know, I can understand that, like, he went in with that and, you know, maybe it paired very well with his ability, but that, like, I'm not going to show that I'm good at anything. Well, fucking fantastic. And whatever he won, but okay, I'm so excited to watch you do that and watch that survivors become this contest of not even running to the middle, but just being fucking nothing. Woo! Charlie hasn't had to do that because just initially, just everybody's been like, oh, okay, well, that's cute. He's a Taylor Swift fan, or maybe a little bit too much. Like, yeah, have another hobby, buddy. That, like, he's been able to, like, operate within, form all these bonds. Nobody's really worried that he's coming in different directions. He very purposefully didn't throw challenges. Like, he's here to win, and he competes, and it just doesn't seem to matter because of, you know, again, maybe my theory's not right, but I think because people just decided he wasn't a threat, and so many other people were leaping at the opportunity to become a threat. So it's like we've seen somebody take the threat level off themselves without having to really lessen themselves as a result, which, you know, in my wheelhouse.
And also, this sets us up for what I think is basically, like I said, the narrative arc that's going to shape the finale, right? Like, it's the Charlie versus Maria showdown now, because this is the moment where Charlie's strategy, we see if it comes to fruition or not. Because there's still the chance, as we noted earlier, Maria could stop this.
Yep.
You know, she wins immunity at 5 and then convinces everybody, like, well, you know, your next best choice is Charlie. Well, shit, it backfired on him, but he took the shot. Either way, I think this sets us up for a great, like, plot line going into the finale, which is not always the case. And in some recent seasons, I've just been like, oh man, I'm not even all that excited for any plots that I've got going into the finale. In this case, I am. I want to see how this shakes out, although I do feel like I have an opinion.
Yeah.
And I think you're up the same opinion.
Yeah. I mean, look, I'm not going to say that I'm really confident that Charlie wins, because sometimes the show can only do the best they can do. So they'll present somebody is really good and then shit happens and it's going to be like a third party. But I feel like if it was Maria, the doubts we're expressing about Maria wouldn't exist as much from the edit.
I think one of the other things too is I'm thinking Charlie probably does beat out Maria. I think also it's not a guarantee that Charlie gets to the end.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Yeah. I think he succeeds over Maria, but like, then yeah, man, fucking fire, right? And he could, now we'll get into that in a second, but yeah, he could lose. And then, yeah, I mean, like, I still think Kenzie could win or something like that, but the story gets to go all the way to the finale. And that's exciting because it's like was established in the first episode and it's been present throughout. So,
right. Yeah. We even got the flashback in this one, the Malcolm and Denise scene from the first, second episode.
And great on Charlie for tying it all together. It's like, yeah, but Malcolm didn't win though, because he didn't do this.
Hey, maybe that's why they're calling it back, because, you know, maybe history repeats. Maybe we are totally wrong. And this, you know, this is going to be the exact same scenario. Charlie slash Malcolm goes out. Maria slash Denise goes on to victory.
Yeah. No, no, and I'm not ruling that out, but I think for Maria, it has to be that she's never been, they're never able to vote her out. I don't think she has a maneuver left to outmaneuver in, you know, situations in which she's available to be voted out.
Absolutely.
Which, I mean, should be noted, is only one situation left, right?
And also, you mentioned fire making. Yeah. And let's go back to some fan mail here, because we got a fan mail that says, hey, I'm wondering if you guys picked up on all the foreshadowing that Liz is doing fire. Last week, they showed her pissed trying to make fire. This week, there was a shot of her with a reflection of the fire in her glasses. Does this mean she wins fire?
Yeah, and that was sent before this episode again. So this episode, we get another mention of her talking about how, you know, she's no good at challenges. She's no good at fire. Yeah. No, I think it means the opposite.
Yeah, I was going to say, no, it does not. It could mean that, but it doesn't. It does not mean that.
No, it means the opposite, that Liz is going home with fire. And the last time that we got such... And to answer your question, yes, I've noticed some of that foreshadowing. Not so much the one in the glasses, because I'm just not attentive like that. But there has been times. So two seasons ago...
Carson, yeah.
So many shots of Carson.
So many.
And, yeah, and Carson lost at fire. Yes. So, yeah... Again, it might not be a thing, but if it is a thing, I think it's more likely foreshadowing Liz going home by fire. And you could question, well, why would Liz even be in fire? Wouldn't anybody want to take her to the end? But, like, say Ben wins the final four. Maybe he picks Kenzie because he forgets names. No more because he feels he owes her and he likes her. And, you know, the story that they've been building since then, that, like, she has been a rock for him. And thus he feels like, that's what I'm going to do. And it could be, like, he knows Charlie has to go, but neither Kenzie nor Liz seem like a particularly good choice in order to make it happen. Ben himself doesn't want to risk his shot. So, like, that's how I could see Liz being in fire against either Charlie or Maria, I should say. So, yeah, I'd say if it's foreshadowing, it's more likely that she does not win fire than that she does.
Right. Agreed. And now...
Oh, hey, before, we should really quick, because I didn't put this in here, but, like, Q is gone. You know, he left this episode. Should we just final thoughts on Q? Because, my God, what a fucking star.
He was quite a find. And, like, what a, like, up and down, like, arc that this man has.
Yes.
Like, from riding high at, like, being the big fish in the small pond in the early episodes to just the constant big mistakes to leading a hide-and-seek game. Just the man brought entertaining TV.
Yeah. And, like, I can get it if, like, you got frustrated after a while. There was times when I was like, I'm about done with this. Yep. You know, and, like, he was frequently wrong about things that could, you know, bother you for because how loudly wrong he was. Obviously for us more amusing, but, like, the man had energy.
Yes.
You know, and you saw it again tonight. You know, he gets that idol and he's just crowing and he's everything's great. So yeah, man, like, I'm guessing they've already booked him for season 50 and they should.
Yeah. I mean, if nothing else, the interactions that others have with Q is worth having Q around, right? Like, we've got good stuff from that this season.
And I'm quick to point out when I'm right on the show, because I fucking love that so much. just last week, I shared a take that I had even prior to last week's episode. It's like, when would anybody ever believe the vote was Q? Could not have been more wrong. Every time. Every time there's going to be a not insignificant number of people who believe it's Q. The difference is that this time, Q was not one of those people despite where holding an idol, you know?
Right.
And to get to that, we briefly did this last week, just kind of off the top, trying to figure out like whose non-idol playing was the worst, whose was most understandable. I'd say, you know, with our new evidence point forward, Hunter still the worst.
Yeah.
I'd say Jem still, we didn't even put that in because it wasn't part of the sequence, but understandable. You know, she thought she had four people or three other people. She was fine. Whatever. Also, how much thought do I really want to put into that space? Right. Anyway, I think Q, I can understand it. You know, it's never been Q. They're always saying it's Q. Why should he believe it now? Right. So there's that. Now, every time somebody else goes out in front of you and then you are being like, no, I'm going to be the one that seemingly makes it worse, but I'm going to let him off the hook there a bit. I don't think he had any idea that Venus went home with an idol.
That's true. The other thing, though, is I would say, like, you're very publicly, like, close to Maria. I guess if you're thinking, well, they're not going for Maria, so it's fine. But also, you've got two opportunities left to play it.
That's,
and again,
that's where it gets dicey. Just two.
You could play it here and potentially win immunity next week, or even play it here and fucking find it again. Like, if you survive, if you didn't need it, or if you did, you could play it and potentially find it and use it again at Final Five.
Yeah. No, I mean, the bottom line, you should play it, man. You're two votes. James went home with two idols when he was three votes away. Why is it that everybody's just like, oh, but I want that free ride? Well, you're not going to get it if you don't survive this one. Why is next week so much more important than this week? So again, it's bad, but I think it's less bad. I'm confident in saying less bad than Hunter, obviously. Less bad than Tiffany. Not more bad than Jem. So really, it's like, who do we understand more between Venus and Q? And I got to say, I kind of feel like I understand Q not playing it more than I understand Venus not playing. Simply because they've been saying that it's Q for like three votes in a row now, and it hasn't been. I could understand at a certain point where you feel like you're Teflon.
Well, then maybe we leave it up to our fan mailing people to tell us what you think. Who was the most egregious to least egregious? Rank them. Because you have fucking five options somehow.
That's right. It can't fall under our top three gimmick.
No. But speaking of the top three gimmick, thank you for that segue. We did get a mention from Ben. Like, thanks, Ben. You're really the hero of this whole gimmick. He mentioned a Who song. It was the Tommy something,
yeah,
right?
Wizard, yep.
Fucking Pitball. Yeah, that's what it was. So he mentioned the Who song. So without further ado,
Who
Andy.
Song. That's great. A song by the Who would probably be the easier way to say it.
Whatever. Sure. Yeah. All the Who's in Whoville. Give us your top three the Who songs. There we go. How about that?
Yeah. So here's the thing. I don't like the Who.
Same.
Yeah, I don't know that I dislike them, but I never got into them. Obviously, like, they're omnipresent in the culture, so I'm aware of their songs. So we're gonna do it because that's how, like, we don't get to choose, right? It's on I mean, obviously we stretched to choose, but this was definitive and there was no other competition. Right. So we're gonna do it. But like, even this morning was frankly probably the first time in my life that I willingly chose to listen to music by the Who.
Right.
And my conclusion, all that, it's like, yeah, I mean, yeah, it's fine. And I can't quite understand, because, like, I do listen to other, like, boomer rock, but for whatever reason, this just isn't my vibe at all. So,
let's race through this.
Yeah, so just my three right now is three, Won't Get Fooled Again, two, My Generation, one, Bob O'Reilly.
Oh, shit. I had same three, just different order. I went Bob O'Reilly, three, Won't Get Fooled Again, two, My Generation, one. Now, with that out of the way, a thing that you had suggested that we'd considered doing at some point, like, should this ever, like, we not have a top three musical act, we could just reference the top three songs by Survivor alumni.
Yeah, man. Right? And all the heat right now, everybody wants to talk about all the vibes on the street, is the returning season for Survivor 50. And now there's actually a little twist. Apparently, Australian Survivor is going to do a season of Australia versus US.
Which might be the first time that you and I ever tune into that show.
Any kind of international Survivor, yes. But
that's true.
I do want to emphasize the might. Because, like, Australia Survivor's brought in U.S. Survivors before, you know.
Yeah.
They've brought in Russell, which, okay, yeah, that doesn't mean anything to us. They brought in Sandra, who we enjoy really a lot. That was,
yes.
That neither induced us whatsoever. So, like, it's going to depend on the 10. And, like,
yeah, it
they
got
to nail a few choices that we're actually interested in watching. Otherwise, we'll continue to skip it.
Listen, Survivor Australia, if you want to have me give you 10 names, I got you. Just reach out. Apparently, you can just text us. I'll respond that way.
Now, what will be interesting is, like, if you're asked by Survivor Australia, do you not risk it if you think you're in the running for 50?
Ooh. No, see, I don't think Probst holds it against you.
I ain't it.
Like, I think he's good. Because most American Survivor fans are not going to know. So it wouldn't matter.
Yeah. But then you'd be giving more, like, it could make playing 50 harder for you, right? Like, say you do well.
That's true.
You know? So yeah. It could be a bunch of also-rans, in which case we wouldn't watch. So, yeah, no. So, but if we're talking about people that used to play on the show, some of them have made music. So we're going to do our top three. I'm going to start with just an honorable mention.
Okay.
So The Noble One by Chris Noble. Just that's my honorable mention for songs by Survivor alumni.
Oh, I mean it, and well deserved. I actually thought about, like, you know, honorable mention. Do I do the Dragons song?
Yeah.
Right, Coaching the Dragons. It's, you know, was it ever like? Can you find it on Spotify? Probably not.
No, but I think it's on YouTube. Some I've seen it. So
yes, it does exist. All right. So anyway, regardless, let's focus on the actual list here, because, you know, I recognize we make fun of Survivor Nicaragua a lot, and it deserves it, right? But that cast did have someone on it who went on to become, like, a legit country music star in Chase Rice. So with that in mind, my number three song is Right Here by SWV featuring Taj from Token Sheens. Just an absolute banger of a song. Samples Michael Jackson, so good. Like, SWV was amazing back in the day. So that's my number three.
We can live the bit behind here. This is top three SWV songs for both of us.
Absolutely it is. Who the fuck would pick a Chase Rice song when you could pick SWV?
So let's talk about them for a second. Yeah, I was a fan. I had their CD. I remember when we first kind of started doing this thing and communicating more, and probably as a result of, like, some kind of fan casting or something. And I think, like, Young Purple Emma, like, asked us, like, how big were SWV? Like, because she was a mere child in the 90s, right?
Yes, she was. Couldn't even rent a car without some...
In the 90s, I think she was in single digits. So, yeah, like, I understand.
Oh, shit. Well, definitely yes. Couldn't rent a car.
So she didn't know, and that's understandable. And honestly, I think we struggled with it because, like, I was big into that music, right? So for me, they were big. But then for everybody else, I've kind of thought about that answer. But, like, here's the thing. They were triple platinum with their first albums. That's no joke, okay? They had a single go to number one on the charts. I don't mean the R&B charts. I mean the charts. And a number two, the one you just listed right here. Although, again, should be noted, that's a remix. That's the Human Nature remix to which you refer.
Yeah, the MJ sample. Yeah, yeah. But that is the better version of it.
And I'll get into that.
I enjoy it.
So they weren't as big as TLC. They weren't like this big crossover. Like, I wouldn't even say they were as big as On Vogue. Maybe a good comparison is like original lineup Destiny's Child. Probably actually a little bit bigger than them. Definitely bigger than other groups like Escape or something. So, like, again...
Yes.
Triple platinum with their first album. Second album went platinum. So, like, some real genuine success. And then... But... I also understand that, like, if you're not into that genre music, you might not have ever heard them, to the point where, yes, one of the members of this, you know, million selling trio, number one hit single trio, was never actually really referred to by her career. When she was on Survivor, she was there as the wife of Eddie George, you know, running back for the Tennessee Titans and I think Texas Longhorns,
which is crazy to me because, like, again, maybe it was just the world that you and I were living in, right? But SWV was big. They're not like some obscure musical
number
act.
One song. Let's not just say, right. This is back when like people had to spend physical money in order for these things to happen. It's not just a bunch of people streamed it. Okay. Yeah. You know, the 3 million copies was people buying for like $15 to $20 the album and then largely being disappointed because most of the songs they liked didn't sound like they did on the album. A lot of remixes here, including my number three. I'm going with Anything, but, what they call the old school remix that appeared on the Above the Rim soundtrack, not the lead off song off their album. That version of it isn't very good. There's also a version of like the remix that has like the Wu-Tang Clan, you know, given some verses. I actually prefer the version without Wu-Tang. Not their best effort, frankly. And maybe some of that is just because like the members they chose. It's just really incongruent to have this bouncy, you know, fun girl group R&B song with like You God rapping on it. Like that's the choice. Like math makes sense.
Right.
But You God, really? Okay. I mean, frankly, I'm rarely ever excited when You God raps on Wu-Tang Clan tracks. So
exactly. There is definitely a pecking order. Maybe that's an eventual list.
So there we go. Number three, Anything by SWV.
All right, so number two, again, abandoning this. This is an SWV list. I'm So Into You. Like, very of its
era. I think it's their lead-off.
Like, I listened to it again today. I have not listened to it in a long time. But back in the day, I listened to it a lot. And, like, going to listen to it today, I'm like, wow, this is very 90s. It's still fun. It's still a good song. They're obviously still amazing singers. But it can't be number one because even though I still enjoy it, like it shows its age.
Yeah. And to get to the point of like, they're great singers. They are sisters with voices. That's the acronym. The songs themselves, like the lyrics are all good. It's just the production really let them down on the first album for a lot of them. And that goes to my number two, which is Like You, Right Here, but the Human Nature mix. Like, what a great way to sample Michael Jackson. I almost wonder if that was always what they wanted to do, but it took them like making some money before anybody would pay for the sample.
Yes. Yes. I think that is absolutely what it was.
So that's my number two. I'm pretty confident we have the same number one.
I was just going to say the same thing. Like if that's your two and three, then I can only assume that you're number one, as is mine.
Yes. And that would be the number one single to which I was referring. Continue.
Yes. And, you know, normally I am the type that prefers more upbeat songs. This one I would not say is as upbeat as the others, but damn, it's so good. Like, this was, like, I'm not generally, like, an R&B love songy type person, and I would play this shit on repeat. It was so good. And, again, all their voices on display, just amazing. It doesn't even necessarily need much backing track. It's just them singing and they're really fucking
good at it. Yeah, perfect junior high dance vibes to this one. This is when you pick that special someone and then the teachers walk around and try to separate you a bit. I went to Catholic school, so maybe that was more of a thing there. Yeah, man, it's great. And you say you aren't. I was at the time. Like, I liked my slow jams by R&B. I liked the upbeat stuff, too. But, like, all I was listening to at that age, like, all of the ages that start with one, basically. I guess not maybe 10, 11, but probably about by 12. It's like hip-hop and R&B. So slow jams for R&B, like, this is the closest I was allowed to express, like, human emotions besides, you know, anger in music. Yeah, you know, Onyx wasn't really showing off a lot of their feelings. So, yeah, no, Week is absolutely number one. I bet it'll be in your head for like another week. I did not mean to do that, but I did. Yeah, so everybody here, you now have like three options of lists to share. You're absolutely the Who. And frankly, if you have genuine opinions on them, free to share them. If you want to go with just Survivor alumni, because maybe you do, it's fine if you listen to that other guy. Maybe there's somebody we're not even thinking about. I don't think there is. Or please, you know, SWV. Let's hear from other SWV heads.
Both of them. I'm excited to hear from both of them.
Yes.
All right. So, hey, speaking of being able to reach us, I should note that last week we mentioned we didn't know much about this texting thing. It turns out it is text only. So apologies to those of you who apparently tried to send pics, because there were mentions of attempting to send pics, including someone who sent us probably my favorite text of the week, which was a very lengthy description of their favorite subspecies of snake, the San Francisco garter snake, with just a level of detail to which I applauded, like made my day.
And what's perfect about it is that we don't get the picture because of the feature. So right. We are left to wonder if they actually sent a picture of a garter snake, or if they were doing what I meant, what I alluded to last week. It's like, wait, what kind of texts are we going to get here? Or if they actually never sent a picture at all, and thus were trying to make us think that that's what they were doing, all of which are excellent interpretations. So it's almost better that the picture didn't come through. We did get a couple of compliments too. We're not reading those. Forget that.
Yeah, we got one actually quickly that it just said, "My guys!" exclamation point. That was the whole text.
That's the whole text. the storm is coming. Another one.
That was a good one too.
But there was one question that I think the people want to know. Mm. This one comes from Lillian from Brooklyn, which is how they identified themselves, because actually the fan mail identified them coming from somewhere else. But yeah, people move. It's the thing. But yeah, this is a question for you specifically, John. Are you bisexual?
I love that we opened it up like that people could text the podcast and like, this is what you chose. Like, I assume.
Hey, man, the people need to know. Nobody gives a shit if I am. I think they know instantly. Like, this guy comes off as more hetero than anyone. So I don't. No questions here.
John, I assume that this is about jokes I've made. Like, I don't feel like someone is just hearing my voice and thinking that guy sounds pretty bi.
People can dream,
right? You know, I guess maybe it's just my jokes about Grindr, which will soon probably turn into jokes about sniffies, because I've recently learned some information about sniffies, and that's going to be my new go-to. So just, you know, this is the changeover from now on. All my Grindr jokes are sniffies jokes.
The Grindr ones were getting outdated there.
Exactly. Like, I gotta stay with the times, keep my finger on the pulse. But really, like, all those were just ways to wedge horny jokes into a podcast. And just like, when I can't make a hetero joke, I still want to make the horny joke.
Yeah, because really nobody wants to hear horny jokes from like hetero dudes, because frankly, we've abused it, right? The same way that we're not allowed to use certain words. We can't be horny on Maine because most men, hetero men are fucking gross with it.
They've ruined it.
Yeah.
They're disgusting. Me, I'm disgusting in an inclusive way. So it's so much better.
That's right.
But no, to answer the question, no. There's your very brief answer. No. Yeah,
but where would you rank yourself on the Kinsey scale?
It's like a zero or whatever.
Yeah. I think I rank high on the Kinsey scale, but
there you go, up top, bro. Yeah. No, I've genuinely been asked this before, and it's like, you know, I get it. I can see you like, man, that's a handsome guy right there. And that's it. That's as far as it goes.
Yeah.
So
no, I think it's like we're hopelessly hetero, but we're not like, you know, close-minded, and that I think throws people off.
Right?
How are these guys dudes yet? And it's like, well, it's possible to be both. It's really easy, in fact.
Yeah. All right. Anything else, Andy, before we wrap this thing up?
Nah. Let's come comment on our website, purplerockpodcast.com.
You know, keep those fucking texts coming. Yeah, because I was genuinely entertained by some of these. So.
Like I said, sometimes we'll incorporate them into the podcast. Sometimes we won't, because, like I said, we like to dictate what we want to talk. I like to dictate what we'll talk about, if I'm being real here. And, you know, people may have noticed, yeah, you start getting too close to guessing what we're going to do, and I won't do it just out of spite.
We will pivot. That's exactly it. Like, it's the same as Kenzie with other people's credit, or Maria with other people's credit. Right. Like, nope, I don't want to do it, because it was someone else's idea now.
So
Andy is the Maria of this podcast.
It's quite possibly true. I'm yep. not, I can't deny. Let's hit some themes here.
This is the copyright.